It's time when we're joined by the partners from Blevins Franks here in Spain, and today it's Bill Blevins and Chris McCann this week, and we'll be reflecting on the UK budget. But before we start, though, what caught your eye in the news this week, Bill?
Yeah, hi. Hello, Howard. It's been a very busy week. I refuse to countenance any discussion concerning the Oprah Winfrey interview. We've had more than enough of that already. Thank you very much. I was concerned when I read that Carles Puigdemont, who is the former president of Spain's Catalonia region, has now been found responsible for his actions, and the extradition of Mr. Puigdemont from Belgium is going to take place, it seems, on sedition charges. There'll be appeals, of course, and it will take a very long time before he arrives back in Spain to answer to Spanish justice. It was interesting that the foreign minister, Arantxa González-Lea, she said the decision really was a sign of respect for the Spanish justice systems and the problems of Catalonia will be solved in Spain, not in Europe. So Mr. Puigdemont, I'm afraid, is down to appeal for some lengthy period of time. It was also something of a volatile week in the stock markets, particularly in the technical area of stocks and the United States in particular, bouncing up one day by 3%, down by 4%, up again by 3%. It was difficult to assess quite where the markets were headed, but it seems to me that the $1.9 trillion pandemic contribution from the United States has boosted the markets, at least temporarily, not just in the US, but around the world. Stocks rose in Asia towards the middle end of the week, and then they also improved in the States. So I think the way forward is to continue to consider that if you are thinking about investment, it really is time that makes you money in the markets and not timing. I was also interested, Howard, given that we're discussing these issues in Spain, to discover that Spain has injected over 4.7 million doses of the vaccine and indeed have given more people the second dose of the vaccine than has been the case in the UK, despite the UK's great success in inoculating what is probably about 25% of the population. But Spain has a target of 70% of the adult population being inoculated by the end of the summer. That means they have to inoculate a total of 27.4 million people. But with the arrival recently of an increased number of vaccines, it looks to me as if they are accelerating the process, and probably by the end of the summer they may have met their target. It was interesting also to see that in the UK budget, Rishi Sunak announced an increase in support for the leisure and tourism industry, and that combined with an €11 billion package introduced in Spain and the potential introduction of a vaccine passport, it may be possible for, once the restrictions in the UK are reduced, it may be possible for the UK tourism industry to start revisiting Spain in large numbers come May. So there's been an enormous amount of airline booking, so hopefully that will help to generate a big boost to the Spanish economy over the next 6 or 7 months and going forward.
Yeah, let's hope so. OK, back to the UK budget. A difficult time for any Chancellor trying to balance the books with the backdrop of the pandemic. But at a high level, what are the main things we learned from Rishi Sunak on budget day?
Well, I think the challenging things, the things that perhaps are the headline problems that Rishi Sunak faces, are that, first of all, the UK economy itself shrunk by an enormous 10% throughout 2020. But he did say that he expected the economy to rebound in 2021 with annual growth of about 4%. So it's going to take some time to catch up on the shrinkage that occurred in 2020. He also said that he forecast a return to pre-COVID levels of economic growth by the middle of 2022, with economic growth looking at being about 7.3% next year, which is, I think, quite ambitious. But I do expect that there is a pent-up demand in retail, travel, leisure, that once the restrictions are taken off, we will see effectively all of those savings which people have made when your wife can't buy a dress in a shop for the best part of 15 months is obviously a pent-up desire to get back to retail therapy. So I suspect there will be a rush to the shops next year, to leisure and retail, and 7.3% might be okay, but it does, as I say, look ambitious. It's a shame in his statement that he had to remind us that 700,000 people have lost their jobs since the pandemic began, which is a sizable number of unemployed people, another drain on the UK economy. Unemployment, again, he says, is expected to peak at about 6.5% next year. And that's about 5% lower than he had previously predicted, but of course it's about nearly 60% higher than it was pre-pandemic. So again, unemployment is a major cost on the economy. And the UK economy, and this is, I think, the most frightening aspect of all, is set to borrow a peacetime record of about £355 billion, rising in the latest estimates to somewhere around £400 billion to support the country and its people during the period of this pandemic. He says that in 21 and 22, the borrowing will total £234 billion. These debts, he says, are going to take several governments to repay. And so I suspect that my grandchildren, who are in their, they're under 10 years of age, I think they will still be funding tax repayments of this debt in 30, 35 or even 40 years' time. This is a massive amount of debt. It is, in fact, the largest tax-raising budget since Norman Lamont back in the early 80s. And we also have the largest debt since World War II. So it's pretty dramatic. You know, there is a lot of challenges facing a man who's been the Chancellor for a very short space of time. I would not want his job in trying to balance the books. But it seems to me that it's realistic to raise taxes. This is the largest tax raising budget since Norman Lamont, but they've been spending greater sums of money than ever before. So you can see it has to be done if we are to stay on an even keel.
Well, it sounds like the Chancellor's got a bit of a balancing act on his hands.
Well, it is a balancing act, and he's on a very thin tightrope. He wouldn't need to slip very much to fall off of it. There's been quite a lot of criticism of him as a personality. But frankly, I don't think anyone could have done a better job at this moment in time. I mean, there are enormous pressures on the UK government and also, of course, on Spain and other EU countries to try to keep their economies rolling on, but at the same time to continue to repay the national debt that has been accrued over the period since this pandemic started. So there is an undeniable requirement to raise taxes, but they're trying effectively, with a combination of increased taxes and borrowing, to do so in a way that doesn't stall the economy nor alienate voters. And so within Rishi Sunak's budget, it was effectively, perhaps in terms of raising tax, could be described as a stealth tax budget. Allowances were frozen in a number of areas, and I'm going to leave Chris to talk to you about that in a moment and how it might impact upon people living in Spain. But it was a difficult proposition and one that I think he faced up pretty well.
Well, having seen how the UK has dealt with some of these issues, how do you think other countries, such as Spain, would approach similar problems?
I think Spain is doing all the right things. It has some deep problems within its economy. I read a report by Angel Gurría, who is the Secretary General of OECD and has done a pretty good job. He's a Mexican. He's been in place for, I don't know, 15 or 16 years. And it's pretty clear that Spain is facing its longest and deepest recession in 50 years. And whilst the definition, if you like, the depth of that recession has been broadly similar to other OECD economies in terms of the real impact on their gross domestic product, my concern is about the rising unemployment and the deterioration of government finances, which in Spain have been steeper than in many other EU countries. And I think the government of Spain's response has been what I would describe as appropriate. It helped, I think, mitigate the worst effect of the pandemic crisis. And that has included a rather ambitious consolidation programme, if you like, to reduce the public deficit and measures to restore confidence in the financial sector. And that included a lot of stress tests on banks and measures to strengthen the resilience of the cajas. And they made progress in a number of structural reforms, which are long awaited structural reforms in Spain. He mentioned in a report that I read that there were three pillars to creating a new growth model in Spain. They focused largely upon the labour market, upon the breadth and opportunities within education, and of course the regulatory reform, which can often be so all-consuming bureaucratic in Spain. Everyone will, I think, understand what I'm trying to say. But I think essentially, Howard, my personal opinion is that the labour market has to be the key priority, especially given Spain's record unemployment levels among the OECD countries. I mean, no modern economy can actually afford to have one in five active workforce members unemployed, certainly not in the euro area. And I think that the government now need to address these three central pillars of new growth, the labour market, opportunities and breadth of education, as it were, and regulatory reforms. But I think the government have got the message. Clearly, they have the opportunity to assist their economy. I read that Nadia Calviño said that she has ambitious plans to use the country's $140 billion EU coronavirus recovery fund to transform its economy. That money is going to come into Spain over the period of the next 6 or 7 years, but Spain has already approved a budget that allows it to borrow $27 billion in advance of receiving that money. And she says, Calviño says, we all have an enormous responsibility to ensure that this is a success. The government, regional and local administrations have all got a responsibility. We are aware that we now have a recovery plan, which is a unique opportunity to begin a progress of transformation in Europe. I think Spain are doing all the right things. I think it's going to take time for the economy to recover. And of course, the sooner we have a relaxation in COVID-driven restrictions, the sooner the economy will begin to bounce back. But it does have to administer attention to those three key pillars for a new growth model in Spain, in my view.
Yeah, I think you're right, Bill. And also it's down to the Spanish people as well, isn't it? The fact that the character that they have, which has been somewhat suppressed. But
It's quite true, Howard. I noticed that he talked in his presentation that I listened to that there needed to be greater emphasis placed upon those people who are on benefit in Spain, and using greater incentives to get them to truly look for genuine work from which they will earn their keep and pay their taxes. So, it's pretty clear that Spain is under pressure from a number of directions, the EU grant, the OECD pressure, but they're all supporting Spain, and I'm absolutely sure that Spain will get this right in the medium to longer term, given the opportunities that they're now facing.
Okay. Well, we'll turn to Chris McCann now, one of the local Levensrank senior partners based here in Spain. Chris, what do you see as the key changes announced by Rishi Sunak?
Hi, Howard. Well, I think the main focus was obviously on continuing to support the UK economy in the face of the pandemic. And so with that in mind, he avoided introducing any radical changes to taxes associated with private individuals. He did, however, introduce some longer-term measures designed to collect more tax from individuals by freezing the main allowances and exemptions for 5 years. In particular, in relation to income tax, the personal allowance and the threshold where the basic rate tax band and the higher rate tax band meet will be frozen. In relation to capital gains tax, the annual exempt amount will be frozen. And in relation to inheritance tax, the nil rate band will remain unchanged. So whilst he avoided overtly named wealth taxes, which were suggested pre-budget, making changes to existing allowances will result in higher tax bills for an increasing number of people who build up assets, whether it's in pensions or property values in the next 5 years. I think what's clever about these stealth taxes is that people don't feel as though they're paying any more tax. In actual fact, according to the Office for Budget Responsibility, the overall impact of these measures, these particular measures in this particular budget, will be that the UK's tax burden will rise to its highest level since the 1960s. More specifically, it means around 1.3 million more people paying income tax and around 1 million more people paying the higher rate of income tax. As regards the amount to be raised by the Treasury, it's estimated to be an extra $8 billion a year by 2025-26.
And for a UK national living here in Spain, or perhaps someone planning to move here in the next year or so, what are the key implications of the UK budget for them, and are there things they should be actively reviewing?
Overall, there's nothing in the budget that will likely impact our clients directly. However, the freezing of the annual allowance, the removal of the inflation link for the pension's lifetime allowance, when combined with other measures relating to capital gains tax, income tax and inheritance tax, may have some impact. I think more importantly, what this budget does is highlight the plight of most developed nations and gives us an indication that we're only at the start of what is likely to be a prolonged period of higher taxes. As I previously mentioned, based on these changes alone, the Treasury has estimated that it will raise an extra $8 billion a year by 2025-26. If you consider that the UK's total COVID-19 debt is currently at around £407 billion, I think it's fair to assume that more measures will be required. This problem is not unique to the UK, and similar measures will also likely be introduced by Spain at some point. This being the case, I think it's essential that if people haven't already done so, people take advice as to how they can protect themselves or start to protect themselves from such tax rises. As I've said on many occasions, Spain's a relatively high tax country, but it's one of the better countries from a tax planning point of view. In other words, with proper planning, it's usually possible to reduce an individual's overall tax liabilities to acceptable levels, and in many cases, to levels below what many have been used to in the UK. So, in the face of these rising taxes, my one piece of advice to listeners is simply to prepare well.
Well, one of the allowances that was frozen was the lifetime allowance for pensions. What does that relate to, and what are the implications?
The UK lifetime allowance in relation to pensions is a limit on the amount of pension benefit that can be taken from a UK pension scheme, whether lump sums or pension income, without triggering an excess UK tax charge. In other words, it is the maximum amount of pension savings that a person can build up in a tax-favoured pension environment. The lifetime allowance for the tax year 2020-21 is £1,073,100 and was due to rise in line with inflation thereafter. Instead, given Mr. Sunak's recent announcement, it will no longer rise in line with inflation and will remain at its current level. The rate of tax you pay on pension savings above the lifetime allowance depends on how the money is paid to you. At 55% on lump sums and 25% on regular pension payments or cash withdrawals. I think more than ever, given that the lifetime allowance has now been frozen, if your pension benefits are approaching or above the lifetime allowance, I would strongly recommend that people take advice as to how to avoid what is an unnecessary tax charge. I think one way to avoid being subject to an excess charge is to transfer your UK pension or pensions to a qualifying recognised overseas pension scheme, or otherwise known as a CURE-OPS. I'm sure many listeners have heard of what a CURE-OPS is. Just to give listeners an example, I actually spoke with a client last week, and I advised that client to move his pension, it had a value of around 1.5 million, from his UK pension into a CURE-OPS. And that not only provided potential ongoing Spanish tax savings, but more relevant to this, it reduced his potential excess tax charge by around £380,000. So these are significant savings that can easily be avoided with fully regulated advice and suitable planning.
What about the speculation about savings that many people may have accumulated that the Chancellor speculated might lead to a stimulation of the economy? What are the implications of that, if he's right?
Well, I think it's clear that we haven't been able to spend as much during the pandemic as we would normally. As a result, we have seen in most developed countries a significant rise in household savings, mainly in the form of cash or near cash investments. Look, human beings are social animals, and we yearn for social contact. We've been starved of that basic need for a year now, and I think we'll overdose on it when we can. I think it's also logical to think that with higher household savings and accelerating vaccination programmes, once social activities resume as lockdowns end, you will likely see a significant increase in consumer spending in the latter part of 2021 and 2022. We've already seen the likelihood of this being reflected in rising stock markets and bond yields over the last few months. So whilst I remain optimistic, a significant increase in consumer activity has already and will continue to stir fears of inflation. And so in this environment, from an investment point of view, I think there will be clear winners and losers as regards assets, regions, sectors and companies. This being the case, it still remains imperative to have a trusted investment advisor combined with good investment managers to help you to navigate through what is likely to be a positive but challenging couple of years.
And Blevins Franks, the website is an excellent place to start if you're curious and interested in improving your financial situation.
Listeners can visit our website, blevinsfranks.com. They will be able to access their local partner's contact details. They will be able to also complete an inquiry form if they would like somebody to contact them. If they do, one of us will be in touch as soon as possible.
Well, many thanks. It's always interesting these times, and we'll chat again at the same time in Spain next week.
Look forward to it, Howard. Thanks very much.